This is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA. Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So for those who are not familiar with Sizzler, can you give us a little background on
your
company? Sure.
Sizzler is one of America's original steakhouses. It got its name for the founder when he first put steaks on a grill. He'd hear the sizzle sound and thought, what an incredible name to go with an incredible sound. They kind of highlighted what we're all about. The Sizzler concept is really designed to be an opportunity for community to get together, family to get together, to have a great meal. It's also been a place where a lot of people's first jobs came from. So not only did we participate in introducing steaks to the whole industry, but we also allowed people to have a lot of first jobs as well. So a lot of people that I meet along the way either tell me about, hey, I went to Sizzler with my grandparents or my parents, or it was my first job. So it's really kind of cool to have that kind of a connection with consumers in a bunch of different ways.
Absolutely. And what is your role as CEO? And what's the most exciting thing about being the CEO of Sizzler?
Well, I think what I get an opportunity to do every day is just to help empower people to do and be the best that they can be. So that's the fun part about the job. There's this typical CEO things that you have to do, the administrative things. But where I really get my energy and my passion is going out into the restaurants, being in the kitchens when people are doing the prep work, and being out in the dining room or taking care of guests. So I guess my job is to kind of be a cheerleader and some respects, to be out there acknowledging and recognizing the job that our crew does, and then also being a face of Sizzler to the guests and really listening to them, finding out how we're doing, are there things that we can do differently in order to be able to stay relevant in their lives. There's a lot of choices out there for people. So our goal is to stay relevant, but stay true to kind of who Sizzler is and what we've been known for 60 years.
Absolutely. And Sizzler started as a small converted office trailer and turned into a family steakhouse. You're now operating 131 locations throughout the U.S. What has been the biggest challenge you faced as Sizzler continues to grow?
Sure. I think the hard part a little bit is staying relevant to the original intent. So Del Johnson created this concept because he wanted to let people have the opportunity to get out of their homes and go have a dining experience somewhere. And he thought that having a great steak meal kind of in a community location was a good thing. So I think that's the core of what started us. So it's tempting to want to change and be something different over the period of time, but staying true to what you really were in the beginning while at the same time staying relevant. So we added a salad bar about 40 years ago because we thought that we needed more of a complement to the steaks besides just a steak and a great baked potato. And since then we've added shrimp and salmon and ribs and some other things to the menu. So I think the biggest challenge is to try to stay true to who you were in the original days and why you were created, and then also try to stay very relevant to the changing consumer tastes that are prevalent today.
Absolutely. And how important is Sizzler's connection with the consumer, and how are you adapting your business to the changing consumer?
Yeah, it's critical. It's absolutely critical. I think that we need to stay connected with them. The consumers not only age differently, so we have the generation baby boomers to generation X and Z and millennials, and we have names for all the different categories of guests, and all their preferences change. So we have to figure out how we stay true to the people who were, you know, coming to Sizzler for years, and yet appeal to new groups of people that want to have food like we'd like to be able to deliver to them. So we've done a lot working on adapting not only just the basic core foods we have and the offerings we have, but even looking at craveability, you know, new seasonings, new flavorings, new products. And then there's also, you know, looking for sustainability, looking for all natural, looking for ways that we can stay relevant to the way people want to eat. And then the biggest thing we've seen is people want to customize. So our whole intent is to find ways that you can come in and then basically build your own meal, whether that's a steak and a baked potato, or whether it's salmon with vegetables, a salad that you can either indulge in and put blue cheese over the top of it, or a healthy salad. So try to stay relevant to the consumers and then make changes based on how they basically want us to be able to deliver that experience to them.
And are you always trying to innovate, or would you say that consistency is kind of key to your success?
Yeah, beautiful double-edged sword, because yeah. I think you want to be innovative so that you can appeal to people. But if you're innovative and people can't depend on you and you lose that consistency, then you kind of fail. And I think that's the biggest challenge today, is how do you stretch the limits a little bit to allow people to have new flavors, new ways to eat. And there's always an evolution of the way people want to experience you. So we've been fast casual our whole existence. So when you come in, there's a menu board. You see the menu board, figure out what you want to eat. You pay at the cash register. And then basically at that point, you're free to either help yourself to salad and soup and a sundae or wait for your entree to be delivered to you. So I think you need to be able to deliver that experience in a consistent basis so that you're dependable. So when people come in, they know the steak's going to be cooked right. They know the baked potato is going to be absolutely perfect and the salad's going to be fresh. But at the same time, you have to have a little twist. So we kind of try to take the familiar and add a little twist to it so that people still feel like there's a new way to be able to experience Sizzler, but depend on the consistency that we've delivered all these years.
Absolutely. And Sizzler is multi-generational culture, meaning that people stay with you guys for a long time. What do you attribute your company culture success to?
It's a part that I fell in love with Sizzler about was I'd meet employees who had been with the company for 25 or 30 years. And not only that, which is a little bit surprising in an industry where going from job to job is so prevalent. But then they'd say, oh, by the way, my sister works at the other restaurant and my daughter's getting ready. She's almost old enough to start working for us. So it's what's interesting, I think, is people look for a place where they get acknowledged, they get rewarded, recognized, they have a fulfilling job. And so when you think about how much time you spend at your job, if we can create an environment where they really are thrilled to come to work, almost feel bad about leaving, although we want them to leave to go be with their families, and then their families can see that and understand that, hey, you really like your job, don't you? Then it's easy to attract them to come into the system. And Sizzler's history has been that way, where we've been able to really have not only just friends and family continue to work, but then people that meet them on the street that they don't know and say, wow, you look really happy. You must really love your job. And so that's a great way to do recruiting. And we've been very successful at that as well.
And what would you say your management style is like? And would you want to work for you?
I guess I love people and I love food. So I like hanging around with people that love people and love food. So we don't really work for each other. It's kind of an interesting environment. My job is to support people. I'm a servant leader. My job is to make sure that you have all the tools you need and the opportunity to do a phenomenal job. If I do that every day, then you're going to work really hard. So yeah, if I had somebody, which I do, and I've had in my career, people that said, hey, I really have an interest in you and I want you to be successful, how could you not want to work with somebody like that? So that's what my goal and objective is, to try to be that same way.
Absolutely. And the restaurant business is a competitive space. What are you guys doing to stay ahead of the competition?
I think the biggest part for us is we need to stay relevant in a number of different ways. And so you need to be relevant on some of the things we talked about, being innovative, being creative. But affordability and value have taken a different place in our lives, I guess. So if we have steak and lobster for $22.99, that is a phenomenal value. But if you only have $10 in your pocket, it's an irrelevant value. So affordability plays an important part also. So we try to have kind of a barbell approach to our menu. So if you don't have a lot of money, come to us because we have great food for that. If you have a lot of money and you want to indulge and you really want to have a great experience, you want to have a glass of wine and soup and salad and you want to have steak and lobster, we're the perfect place to come. So I think our full approach has been to try to be available to anybody to come and have an experience with us, no matter how much money they have in their pocket, and then be able to execute that experience every time that they come in.
Absolutely. And what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are looking to break into the restaurant space?
Man, you got to love food and you got to love people. What's funny about our business is you work when everyone else plays, which is why people go out to eat. They usually go out to eat to be able to have a great time. So you have to really have kind of a hospitality service attitude that you really want to be there to please people and to make them happy. So the restaurant business is centered around food and execution of that food, you know, to the perfect degree, and then the hospitality to have fun with that. So I think the basic core thing, we can find people that are happy and teach them the restaurant business, but we can't teach people that aren't happy to be happy.
Right.
So our biggest challenge is to find people that really love the industry. And so if you love the industry, there's a lot of opportunity. Find a niche that's not filled. When days get long and it's a tough job, if you love what you do, you kind of motor through that. If you don't love what you do and the days get long, the days get long. And yeah. So I think the big thing is to really have a passion for serving people, being around food, being around people that love food and people. And then you don't even really work a day in your life. It's all fun every day.
That's great advice. Don't go anywhere. This is Business Rockstars. This is Carrie Cramp, the CEO of Sizzler USA. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm super lawyer and serial entrepreneur Darren Cavanocchi, here with your Legal Minute Startup Tip. The name of your business is crucial. So when you finally find the name that perfectly complements your business, make sure that it's protected with a trademark. When should you trademark your startup? Right away. The whole process can take anywhere from 6 months to a year or longer. Also, if you've done a comprehensive trademark search, you can find out whether you may be infringing on someone else's property and avoid any legal hassles. So how do you get the process started? You can file a trademark directly with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, or you can use an online service that charges an amount in addition to the federal filing fees. Of course, your best option is likely to hire an attorney. A recent study showed that applicants who hire an attorney are 50% more likely to get their trademarks than those without legal representation. I'm attorney Darren Cavanocchi, wishing you all the best in your business.
Youth vaping is a serious problem. One issue: minors may try to purchase vapor products online. That's why Juul Labs is enhancing age verification on our website. Customers must provide personal information or scan a valid ID with a real-time selfie and are verified by a third party to ensure the purchaser is 21 or over. Learn more about Juul Labs' efforts to combat youth vaping at juul.com/youth-prevention. Juul Labs, for adult smokers only. Paid for by Juul Labs.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
You should.
This is Business Rockstars, and we are back with my wonderful guest, Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA. Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So for those who missed the first half of the segment, can you explain what Sizzler is?
Yeah, it's actually an interesting concept. It was designed as fast casual before there was fast casual. So when you come in the door, we have all of our menu on a board in the entryway so that you can see exactly what we have. The highlight of our restaurant is the salad bar, which is in the, kind of in the middle of the restaurant. So as you're peering across the dining room, you can see this beautiful salad bar with fresh ingredients there. So you go to the cash register, and then our cashiers really are designed as being your Sherpa. They're the ones that take you through your experience and explain to you what Sizzler's all about. So if you've missed something, a lot of people kind of, when they're in a line and they see people behind them, they default to the salad bar. So their job is to really say, by the way, just so you know, we have chicken and salmon and we've got shrimp and we've got these incredible steaks. And then also we have kind of a motto where if you come in and if you don't want mushrooms and onion on your steak and I kind of push you into doing that and you didn't want them, you kind of feel like, hey, I didn't get a great experience here. But if you did want mushrooms and onions and I didn't offer those to you, then you'd feel bad, like, oh, I wish I could have put mushrooms and onions on my steak. So we try to teach the cashiers to be able to read people, to try to understand how to make sure that whatever they wanted, it doesn't matter what they want, we just want to make sure that they understand their options and then really have an experience that they totally enjoy. So that's kind of our goal.
And you guys have a new little twist on your salad. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we've added a mix station. So traditionally, you can go and get salad ingredients and you go to the dressings and you put the dressings over the top and then you kind of push the food around so that it gets absorbed in all the dressings. So we have a mix station where you actually take those ingredients over to someone that we kind of call internally a saladista, who's there really to help you enhance your salad. So we'll have things like artichoke hearts and Kalamata olives and avocado. And then we have some different dressings that you can kind of fuse some flavors together. So you've picked out the ingredients that you love. You bring it to that person. They add a few extra ingredients. They mix that all together. And then on a beautiful refrigerated plate, they hand that back to you. So you have this gourmet salad that you actually created. And people seem to really love the flavor profiles that come out in that. So all of a sudden, they feel very proud of the fact that I created this beautiful. We actually loved it so much, we had Instagram pictures. So you'd take a picture of your salad, and we had a digital board next to there where it would go up to it. So we could get people to Instagram their salad. So it's kind of a cool engagement with our guests. So that's kind of a twist of some of the things we're trying to do with our restaurant.
And the refrigerated plate is key.
It is, because when you get that, it's like, wow, this is really cool. So yeah, it's an important part of that experience.
What trends do you see in the restaurant industry in the next 5 years?
I think the biggest thing for us, and it's a little crazy how it's changed, but convenience. So convenience used to be 5 minutes from here, I have a restaurant, that's convenience. Convenience used to be I can go in and I can really readily understand the menu and how to place my order. So those are all things that everyone, I think, has been, you know, working on to make sure we can execute well. But now it's a new convenience because with third-party delivery, you know, if you're sitting at home and you've got, you know, Netflix just came out with the latest, you know, show that you got to watch all 8 episodes tonight and you don't want to leave your seat, we have to be able to connect with you and be able to deliver food to you. So I think the consumers want convenience in a number of different ways. So that's been our biggest focus today is how do we make sure that with the limited time we have engaging with you, we provide you the best food we possibly can in the kind of format that you want it to be, whether you want to eat it at home or whether you want to eat it fast and run or whether you want a really relaxing experience, whatever your definition of convenience is part of that experience that we're trying to deliver. Cravability is always important. Healthfulness mm-hmm. always important. So those are kind of the entry to the game. You have to be those things. But convenience seems to be the newest buzzword because everybody wants to get more out of the time that they have. So finding ways to be convenient for that experience is a big trend.
That's so true. And you've been the CEO of Sizzler for 13 mm-hmm. years. What has been the biggest lesson you've learned as you've grown Sizzler?
I think it's probably to focus on making sure that we still execute what we intended to execute. The biggest learning I got was I wear my Sizzler logo everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And people will come up and go, hey, I love Sizzler. Let me tell you my story. And they'll tell me the whole story about their fathers and grandfathers and all the things they've done. And then I'll say, well, when was the last time you were there? Oh, I don't go to Sizzler anymore. And I go, what do you mean you don't go to Sizzler? And then I tell them what we're doing. They go, oh my God, I've got to go to Sizzler. So it's this disconnect of we've been around for 60 years. People are very familiar with us. So they're very comfortable being able to come to us. But then they kind of forget about us because unless you're kind of on their radar screen, you don't always get noticed. And it's like a nice pair of jeans. You'd feel comfortable wearing it. You just don't wear them that often. So our job is to kind of re-engage people again and inform them about what we're doing. So I think our biggest learning was that we have a great reputation. People know who Sizzler is, but we need to re-engage with people so that they give us another shot. If we get them back in the door again, we own them again. They're good for another 60 years. So yeah. Our job is to kind of re-engage with them again and get them involved in our restaurants, and then they fall in love with us again.
And are you using social media to engage with prospective customers, or is social media not as important?
No, it's huge. And it's interesting. About 4 or 5 years ago, a bunch of baby boomers were sitting around saying, hey, how do we use social media and what should we do? And so we said, why don't we get some millennials that already know how to do that? So we actually brought on board some millennials in our marketing department and our IT department. And the things that we were struggling with, like, how are we going to do Instagram? Like, are you kidding me? We just do Instagram. You don't like sit and talk about doing it. You just do it. And so social media has transformed, I think, the way we do. I mean, everybody carries their computer is now their telephone, which isn't a telephone. It's really a walking computer that sometimes you make calls on. But so we do everything from be on Facebook with ads. We have all kinds of programs where, like, right now it's Cheese Toast Month. So we have a Cheese Toast selfie program going on, promotion going on. So we actually have an app that you can take a picture of yourself with Cheese Toast with the background of Sizzler's Cheese Toast, and then you can win prizes. And so we engage in social media in all aspects. We think that that's probably a way to more effectively reach consumers today because they're not really sitting at home watching ABC and NBC. And right. So TV's great, will always be the mass media, but there's so many ways that you can really pinpoint exactly the target audience that you want and then get messages to people that want the messages. There's nothing worse than hearing from somebody that you don't want to hear from. Right. But there's also nothing worse than missing an opportunity to hear from somebody that you do. So our goal is to be present when you want us to be present. So we give you a reminder that, hey, you ought to come in and have a meal at Sizzler because we're waiting for you.
I think I need some cheese toast later.
I think so.
And what is the number one thing that sets Sizzler apart from other franchises?
I think what's interesting, we're still evolving the brand. So, and I say that 60 years old, it's kind of hard to say you're still evolving, but we're still changing and trying to adapt to different consumers. And so our franchisees that come on board aren't told, listen, here's the way you have to do things. It's black and white. You can only do it this way. So I think the ability to be able to engage with us, we listen to them. There's a lot of really good information, good ideas coming up from our franchisees. They're not all good ideas, but there's a lot of good ideas that come from our franchisees. So I think being involved with our franchise to be able to really have a say in how it's run and what goes on and for us to be really intent on listening to what they want to contribute makes us a great franchise.
If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice before starting to be the CEO of Sizzler, what would you tell yourself?
I think probably enjoy the journey because we all have this destination, like I can't wait to get to this point or I can't wait for this to happen. And then you pass by all the really cool stuff along the way. So I think it's to slow down a little bit, to enjoy the journey. We have a deal, we talk about table touches. So when the managers are out in the dining room, they're supposed to touch the tables. And some people take it literally that they literally go and touch the tables. But the reality is to really engage with the guests. So it's one thing to come up and say, how was everything? And then walk away to the, you don't really expect an answer.
Right.
You just want to go to the next person. So I think if you stop and really engage with somebody and say, hey, how was your meal? And I noticed you really love that, or you order that, or how many times you've been here, or how'd you hear about us? So that level of engagement with the consumers to let them talk to us and give us feedback on what's going on and be able to enjoy the time that we have together, that's part of that journey that makes this all fulfilling. So at the end of the night, you can think, man, I really made a lot of people happy today.
Well, I'm excited to see where Sizzler is in the next 5 years, and I'm definitely going to go have myself some cheese toast.
Great deal.
Later for lunch. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Business Rockstars, and that was my wonderful guest, Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
If you haven't yet heard of Molly Burke, let me fill you in. She's a typical sushi-loving millennial, a motivational speaker, and a YouTuber with almost 2 million followers. And she's done it all after losing her vision. I spoke with Molly, and she told me that success definitely didn't happen overnight.
No, definitely not. And I think a lot of people get discouraged when they start a YouTube channel and they look at somebody like me who has 1.8 million and are like, oh, I'm never going to get there. Like, of course. I mean, it took me a year to hit 5,000 and another year to hit 10,000. So it's really about getting into making videos for the right reason, for the passion, loving sharing your story or your message, whatever it is, and creating your own little community. It shouldn't be about the, you know, quote, fame or fortune or whatever that kind of idea might be.
Check out Molly Burke on YouTube.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. This is Business Rockstars. And I have two rock stars today. We've got Jeanne Grubbs and Abby Lewis Evans, co-founders of Our One Agency. Thanks so much for stopping by,
yeah,
ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. So tell me, what is Our One Agency?
So basically, we're a new media marketing agency. So we came from the world of big branding, advertising, doing a little bit of everything, and branched off about a year ago and started something that's really tailored for advertising today and now in 2017. So we do a lot of social media marketing, influencer marketing is a big part of it, content production, strategy, branding, all that good stuff.
And this is the future of marketing. And
yes,
if you are an entrepreneur watching or listening and you're not incorporating this into your business yet, you probably should, right? Tell me a little bit about why this is so important, because it's the future.
Yeah, it's a lot of bigger agencies come from a world of more of the traditional form of advertising. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to just completely switch gears and focus on how quickly everything's changing. And I mean, there used to be, you know, five channels or five avenues that you would advertise on. It's like print, TV, maybe out of home. And then digital started coming in, and then social came in, and then influencer marketing came in, and just everything changed. So basically now there's millions of channels you can advertise on. So everyone is an outlet. So it's really just interesting getting brands to understand how to navigate that space and how to successfully do it, because it changes every day.
And I think it can feel very overwhelming for brands. It's like the wild, wild west. But at the same time, there's so much opportunity in the digital space that there wasn't in those other avenues.
Right.
And, you know, for example, you can measure performance and results a lot better online. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, and the high frequency of everything going on today allows for, you know, on the fly optimization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can remain relevant through always turning and pivoting with either your audience or the relevant space that the world is in, you know, it's only a, it's a better human to human connection that your brand can make with your consumers instead of throwing out a TV ad and then just waiting for everything to trickle in.
It's definitely more real time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be like, we'll do it and we'll optimize and we'll get data learning later. But you can tell immediately now when you post something if it's doing well or not, because people gravitate towards it or they don't. And then if it's not doing well, you can take it down and optimize.
And they have the opportunity to react quickly, either via comments, engagements, you know, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes less time and money to see what works. You can test something and put it out there.
Less money is key because I think a lot of brands, smaller brands, so obviously the mega brands we work for and they have bigger budgets, but they're smaller startup brands too that don't have big budgets that we really, really, really encourage to play in this space.
And because the playing field for them too.
Yeah, they can get so much for their money. So the ROI for, you could take a small brand and spend just a few thousand dollars on influencer marketing, but you're able to pick the most influential person, the most, you know, authentic person that is needed for that brand. And they're going to go so much further with that $2,000 than trying to play anywhere else where they're just blasting it out.
Yeah. And both of you have a marketing background. Can you each individually tell me a little bit about your history in this space?
Sure. It's been a shared journey, I'd say, of just big agency experience, both from the account service side of things, which is the liaison between creative, you know, in internal departments and your clients. So as that role, you know, having grown up in the ad world that we both did over the past, you know, decade plus, to age ourselves, you know, we learned a little bit about everything and seeing how it plays out from a strategy point of view in clients' reactions, their business needs, and learning how to curate a way to solve that business need, only knowing what the problem is. So being a solutions-oriented department.
Yeah, we actually both worked at the same ad agency back in Dallas. That was a digital interactive shop at the time in 2006 or something. And it was it was like banner ads, right? So it was like the invention of like digital marketing. So that was kind of where I fell in love with like the digital side. And then it's just so funny now, fast forward 10, 11 years where it is now. But yeah, and then came out to LA, been at big agencies out here working on the big brands, like Abby was saying, on account strategy side and digital and social media. So we basically had that under our belts and knew that we saw an opportunity where the industry was moving to really try to start something that tailored specifically to where the industry was moving and get away from some of those more traditional agencies.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine in your industry and in a lot of industries, there's this constant push and pull between traditional avenues, but then keeping up and evolving as well. So you obviously are evolving into the digital space and you saw a trend and you acted on it. Mm-hmm. So what made you go, you know what, this is where it's going and I want to be a part of it?
For me, it was a couple years ago, I worked on a big Super Bowl campaign at the agency I was at. And influencer marketing was a big part of that campaign. And I realized with Super Bowl, people were spending so much money on to be, you know, their 60-second, 30-second spot in that. And then there's like kind of this whole other side that became equally in years to come more important than the actual 30-second, 60-second TV spot. And I was playing in that space and just seeing that it was, like you said, the Wild West. And there were so many opportunities to win the Super Bowl in that space. So I think in my background, of course, was always in social. And I just saw, I was like, it's only going to continue to be that path. And I really want to just like capitalize on it now and see what happens.
Totally.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, mine comes from just, I want to do something different every day, all the time, and have it always be so fresh. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of where I was thriving in my, you know, joy and passion in what I was doing leading up to that and the opportunity to do it all the time. just sounded like, you know, heaven. So.
And work for ourselves.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Sure. You guys have been in business for what, a year?
1 year, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So about a year ago, is that when you...
Hit our heads and decided this was a good idea.
did you immediately quit your full-time jobs?
Yep.
Or did you kind of make the transition slowly?
Cold turkey.
Okay.
Band-aid right off.
Okay. So tell me about that. Let's go back to when you made the decision. How did you...
Hour one of hour one.
Yes. When you made the decision, what were some of those first steps you took? Maybe both mentally and literally.
Right. It was terrifying.
It was. I mean, we had an opportunity to jump on, and you know, it required us stepping out on our own, which was terrifying and exciting all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, sometimes you just need those things to help you feel like there's a sign and that you should take advantage of it.
So what was the sign? What was the opportunity?
There was just a big project for us to work on that we could throw our hat in the ring as an agency of our own.
So, yeah, and it was there was all these little moments along the way that were just like every time I would go to bed at night and be like, this is crazy. I need to keep my job. It's super secure. My job's amazing. I love the team. I love what I do. And same with Abby. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I would wake up the next morning and something happened that would show, be like, push us in that direction to do it. So it was just all these little mini signs of, you know, just things coming together or people coming on board to help us and say, I want to help you pitch this. And because I believe in this too. So every time like someone came on board and said, I'm in too, let's do this. It was just like
just confirmation.
Yeah.
That it was, the right thing
it was all these
right
little
time.
Things that just, and everyone I talked to in my network, every time I was like, this is crazy. People were like, this is, you have to do this. It was just, we had so much support and so many people, you know, it's like pushing us over to that, knowing that we could, if we just didn't question it too much. And we didn't actually get that first project, which is funny because that it now looking back was a blessing in disguise. We were able to pivot and go for a lot of other types of work that we wouldn't have been able to. And so, you know, it's like everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And perseverance is the name of the game.
Right. Perseverance.
So when that first project fell through,
oh gosh,
what did you guys do?
You know, just dusted ourselves off and thought, well, what are our dream accounts? What would we always say we wanted to work on, whether we got to or, you know, didn't get to in our former life now at the big agencies? Because we're past that now. And so what's our dream? What do we want to work on? Let's do it. Let's go after it. And we have and did and will continue to.
Still doing? It was weird. It was a weird feeling because, you know, I think we, in my mind, it was like this or nothing. And so then when it didn't work, it was, we didn't have a backup. We weren't like, well, now. So it was that hustle mentality of like sink or swim. It's like, we've already created the name, the brand. We know what we stand for. We know what we want. We are to a point where, you know, we have a lot of great connections and network of people. So let's get out there and hustle. And that's just, I mean, it was literally sink or swim. We had gone to that point where the Band-Aid had been ripped off. So if we had kept our jobs and pitched that and didn't win it, the security blanket would have been our jobs and we would have just stayed. So it's good that
we missed out on everything that's happened in the last year, which has been a mix of, you know, terrifying and insecure with immense highs and pride.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Great story, ladies. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about their journey of making it in that first year and also influencer marketing because they are experts in this area. So much more with the co-founders of One Hour Agency. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Remember, it's all about the customer. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. The customer is always right. You've heard that before. It's the backbone of customer service. But let's go beyond that. The customer is the backbone of your business. Happy customers buy more products, endorse your service, and most importantly, bring more customers by word of mouth recommendations. So how do you keep your customer happy and satisfied, returning over and over and giving you that personal endorsement? It's simple. Understand their needs, know them personally, and connect with them. Understanding their needs, put yourself in your customer's position to better understand your product, your service, and how to improve it. Know them personally, connect with them, talk to them, not at them, listen to them, and create real relationships. Know their birthdays even, and on that special day, send them a message. Remember, it's all about the customer, and they deserve the very best you have to offer. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
This is a cow whose milk became everyone's favorite cheese at the craft fair. But cheese only lasts so long. The impression a small business makes needs to last much longer. That's why Vistaprint is offering 500 truly personalized business cards starting at $9.99. Choose from hundreds of fresh designs tailored to your type of company, or upload your own. The choice is yours. The time is now. Get 500 business cards starting at $9.99 with promo code 9696. That's promo code 9696 at Vistaprint.com. Vistaprint, own the now.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars, and this is our CEO Roundtable segment. And joining me today is two beautiful rock stars. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Jessica Naziri, and I am a writer, blogger, and entrepreneur. I write about technology and make it fun and exciting for females to get involved.
What about you?
I'm Catherine Ahn. I'm the founder and CEO of Teatro Restaurant and Ahn Catering.
How do you guys stay passionate and motivated in what you're doing? I know the roller coaster of being an entrepreneur is not easy, and sometimes we can hit some pretty lows. But I'm curious for you guys, how do you stay passionate, empowered, and motivated in what you're doing?
I think that's easy if you don't mind me asking.
Answering
first. Just to begin with, the career that I chose for myself, that's where my passion started. So I continue working with people that are along the lines and within my goals. And it just keeps it exciting and fresh all the time for me.
Well, what about for you, Catherine?
I love the food industry space. I go out and eat a lot, so that's easy for me. It's also part of a family business, and that's also so important to me.
It's trendy now to be an entrepreneur. It used to be like, oh, you don't have a job and you're trying to start something. Now, being an entrepreneur or a CEO or self-employed is like the cool, hip thing to do. So let's talk about the negatives and the stressful parts of being a CEO, just to be real about it. What do you think?
Wow, just, you know, you never know when the money will be coming in. And at the end of the day, they say, like, you know, with your passion, all that will start coming in. But there are times I'm like, wow, did I make a good decision over there? Is my rent going to pay itself? You know, so I think that it's a little unstable initially, right? And then after a while, once, you know, your business grows, then
there's stability.
Yeah.
What about for you, Catherine? The ups and the downs. What are some of the tough parts of being an entrepreneur?
Well, like I was saying earlier, it's like you, once you have, for me, the fun part is creating the product and the concept. And once that's done, then you really have to pay attention to your team and keeping them happy. And I take a lot of things to heart. So even when I hear like my dishwasher is not happy, I'm like, why is he not happy? Like, it's really hard to foster that team that wants to stick with you and put in that loyalty and that dedication. That's the part that's most important to me. And I find that that part is a skill, that balance on itself it's an art form in itself. Like, you don't want to be too close to your staff, but you don't want to be too distant to them either. So it's been an art balance for me, trying to decide how close do I get to my staff and still foster like a happy, like, core environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you get personal? Do you text them, right? Like, how do you correspond?
Are you sending emojis or not?
Yeah. I think it's just finding that good balance between making sure that they know that you are their friend, but at the same time, you're also the boss. And so I agree, though, it's hard to draw the line, but I think it's different with each person. Mm-hmm. I think you can adapt to each individual.
Yeah, you have to.
A question I'm curious to ask you guys is, do you focus more on working hard or working smart?
Ah, that's a great question. I think it's about working smart. When people finish at like 11 p.m., sure, there's always things to do, but you know, I say try not to multitask. Have a few things you're gonna do, like three like checklist items, and then kill those, then go on to the next thing instead of like doing 5,000 things at once and ending it, you know, 1 a.m.
I agree.
So work smart.
I'm always trying to work smart. Yeah. I say that I hate working hard. I see a lot of entrepreneurs, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I admire them and respect them for it, but I see a lot of people like Gary Vaynerchuk, love the guy, amazing guy, but he brags about working 18 hours a day and not spending a lot of time with his family. And so for me, I want to do the opposite. I'd rather be relaxing 18 hours a day and have my money be making me money. So for me, I'm always trying to figure out ways that I can work smarter, which is why I'm always reading books and going to events and trying to study from other smart people that have the systems and the business model that allows them to generate the income without them. So do you have anything? Are you hard worker, smart worker?
No, both? I definitely agree with you, but I give credit to the staff that works hard, because I feel like at the same time, finding those employees that want to work hard for you and show that dedication is also rare. And the other part, if I can train them to work smarter, I will. But I want them to show me that they will put that dedication and work hard.
Yeah.
And the rest, I'm willing to train them. Yeah.
I love that.
And it does depend on the line of business,
right? Yeah.
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 When does a CEO know that they should step down as CEO and replace themselves and hire a new CEO?
When they've done everything they can for the company. At that point, when they're not serving it. Exactly.
Okay. What do you think, Catherine? You're in the...
Your family business
has been around for 40 years, so I'm sure you guys have had iterations of CEOs.
Well, you know, I realize like... how do I say this? I think for my family, for a long time, it's because we have such a great brand and everyone's wondering, like, how come you only have five? And that's because we only have, like, five sisters. And it's been hard for my family to find the right partner to have us grow. It's that trust thing, like, really learning how to trust someone and then being able, when it's something that you start as from scratch, you don't want to pass the torch over necessarily. It's harder, but you have to in order to grow the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's wrap our segment up here with some powerful quotes or sayings that you live by. Do you guys have any off the bat? For me personally, I say it all the time, but that's because it changed my life as soon as I started applying these, and I have them written down for me to see them every day. The habit is more important than the effort, and do less, better to completion. Those habits and conditioning myself to see those every day has really served me, because when you get done at a long day of work, you don't always want to put the effort in to go and hit the gym, but the habit's more important than the effort. So 5 minutes a day, or waking up, I don't always want to study in the morning, but I make myself do it. And if I don't want to do an hour, I'll just do 5 minutes, because again, the habit's more important than the effort. And then as a CEO, you're always juggling stuff. So trying to do less, better to completion, and not start something if I'm not going to finish it. But what about you guys? What are some sayings or quotes that you've lived by that have served
now
you?
Now I like that one. Yeah. I'll take that.
I had this one came. It was more of a fable, but it's too long, so I won't bore you guys
just
with
a quick,
it.
Just one quick saying.
Okay, so one quick saying. You are what you think you are, because I think it starts from all from within. One. Like, if you don't you think you're going to fail, you're going to fail. But if you believe you can do it, you're going to keep working hard at it and push yourself there.
The power of focus.
Yeah.
I love that one. What about Jessica? Let's end on a good one.
There are so many, and I get inspired all the time whenever I meet people. I mean, that's fantastic. The one that you just said is fantastic. But I think that this is something that I always say to myself. If it were easy, everyone would do it. Mm. Right? So if it's hard, there's a reason and there's a passion and then it'll be worth it in the end.
I love that. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.